Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 99 of the Beacon Strategy Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emelson, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, wow. Just, wow.
Time to talk. And the best part about all this is it all dropped on Monday as we dropped last week's podcast to the world. So
yeah,
we look like idiots, like we didn't even know what was happening in World of Warcraft. But yeah, no, a bunch of stuff happened.
What was happening? But holy crap! So we're going to talk about all the stuff from this past week. We're going to talk about the cross faction rating, the fact that we're getting 9.2.5 at all, which I had always speculated about, but now we've got confirmation. Boosting communities ban, obviously a huge thing. I feel a little bit prescient in my like rant towards the end of last week's episode about the impact of boosting on pugs. Also major Mistweaver nerfs.
The death of a class of spec. Yeah. Never gonna take another Mistweaver. No.
Yeah, okay.
It's not that bad. Stories of our demise have been greatly, what is that saying? It's like stories of my demise been greatly overstated or something. So yeah, we'll talk about it though.
Yeah, yeah. And then of course we also have some more news from the PTR that we will get through as well. But yeah,
so we have a jam-packed show, so maybe we jump right in to non big stuff. There's a couple of little things that happened last week. One was a pretty good interview, and it's up on Wowhead, from one of the classic developers, Brian Birmingham. So Wowhead sat down with him. He's the lead developer, software engineer for World of Warcraft Classic. And they basically asked him a bunch of questions over, you know, really mostly about Season of the Mastery and what they're doing there and how it came about. It's really insightful just to sort of read through, see like some of the behind the scenes decision making and really some of like the excitement, I think, that at least the development team felt like when Season of the Mastery was at least well received, right? Yeah. The idea of like the changes in Mullen Core, I think they talk about like the original changes were just, we gave the bosses more health so that you could actually see more of their abilities, right? And rather than just zerging it down. And they got a bunch of negative feedback to that because players were like, we want more than just higher health mobs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they also talk a little bit about how they incorporate these new like mechanics into these old fights, but try and keep it within the realm of the old fight, right? So like, I give a little bit of example of Magmadar about how like he'll continue to resurrect core hounds throughout the fight, which is like reusing, the big thing is like reusing assets, but also not making the fights feel like retail WoW fights, like something like an extension of a classic fight. So pretty good read, just in terms of like a bunch of different stuff. And yeah, it was a nice little, if you're into Season of the Mastery and sort of Classic, which played a little bit of, not a huge fan of Classic, I'll tell you. But if you're into that stuff, I think it's a cool little read, a little bit behind the scenes.
I've actually been meaning to go back and level a Classic Hunter. I say this having still failed to complete leveling my TPC Rogue. But I will say I got my fishing up to 225 last night. So, making progress.
Crushing.
Not on leveling, crushing, but making progress.
Numbers are going up somewhere. So that's the good thing. That is the good thing.
Then we also got, kind of moving right along, we got a blue post talking more about tier tokens. So we talked a little bit about the leaks from lore last week, about the way that trading works for these. We got some clarification on that in this blue post. We also got the details of what the tokens they're going to use are. And I have some thoughts. So the old version of tokens, there were three different tokens with four classes each. And these tokens are, there's now four tokens with three classes each. We're going from, what was it? Protector, Vanquisher, and
Conqueror.
Yeah. To Mystic, Venerated, Zenith, and Dreadful. And the setup of these, honestly, like, they say a thematic link, but I think the one that most people picked up on is the fact that there's virtually no armor type shared between the tokens. That's the thing that people picked up on. Like, I personally don't really buy the thematic link when they've got Hunter on the Mystic token instead of Shaman.
Yeah. Like,
what's going on there? That just doesn't make any sense. But the bigger thing is with this setup, it actually exacerbates some inequalities in the current raiding scene because of how popular and powerful specifically the Mystic token is. Druids, Hunters, Mages, three of the most powerful, most popular specs in the game. All on the same token. And then on the flip side, you've got Zenith and Dreadful. Zenith being Monk, Rogue, Warrior. So that's our token. In a lot of raids, you're going to have literally twice as many people on the Mystic token as on the Zenith token.
Yeah.
And that was not something that was the case with the old token setup. And that's something that I personally am a little bit miffed about, because the old token setup actually, based on the simulations that I had done, basically eliminated all of the inequalities in tier set acquisition rates. Like, it didn't matter what class you were, what spec you were going to get it at about the same rate as everybody else. You know, you could still get lucky and get it sooner, or you could get unlucky and get it later, but it wasn't because of your class. It was just because you got individually lucky or unlucky.
Right.
With the new token setup, that effect of like your class determining how quickly you acquire tier is back. It's not back in a huge way like it was when it was just class tokens. Class tokens were really bad. But it's still back to the point that, for example, the other raid team in my guild has four people on the Dreadful token and 10 people on the Mystic token. And that ends up being that basically the people on the Dreadful token are going to take an extra week to finish their tier piece on, or their four piece set bonus on average. Yeah. Like, not literally a whole week on average, but it's like enough past, you know, the line that it's probably like there's going to be a couple of them that are going to be slower just because of the class that they are playing. And that is just an enormous feels bad. So I'm not super pleased about that. It is still a significant, like, night and day improvement over the original, like, just dropping a class item.
Right, yeah.
So this is still way better. And for most teams, like, for my team, it's a very, very minor effect based on your class. Like, super, super minor. Most people are going to be progressing through their tier sets at exactly the same rate. Just individual RNG, and that's it. So that's kind of what I expected the Blizzard team was going for with this. But really the thing that I think people notice is that there's no armor types that are shared on these. So world first teams are going to have to choose on the second week whether they do tier token splits or if they do armor stack splits. And I don't know if that was actually the intent, but the appearance of that intent,
so funny,
is a negative, I will say. But then we also got one more clarification about the way that trading is going to work for these that I'll touch on, and then we'll move on. So tier pieces, you have to get a tier piece at that eye level in order to trade it. So for example, it's not sufficient to get, for example, an LFR helm and then use the fact that you have a Kel'Thuzad helm. I don't even know if he drops a helm. Shoulders. You know, LFR shoulders and have Kel'Thuzad shoulders will not let you trade a normal tier shoulder.
Right.
You have to get the normal or heroic tier shoulders or mythic tier shoulders in order to trade the normal ones. Right. So it's fairly locked down in terms of ability to trade it. This doesn't super matter for most of us. It does impact world first teams. But for the rest of us, like, you probably weren't going to be trading a lot of these anyway. You weren't going to have a lot of like extra people. Like, for my team, it would just be, you know, what slots. I mean, we would be able to trade normal stuff the second week, kind of.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and I think the only time it's going to be bad are those sort of singular situations where, like, you get your tier helm at like heroic with like leech on it, and like then a mythic helm drops, and like, yeah, you have to take it, even though, at least for like Mistweaver, it probably isn't a straight upgrade.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
So that's sort of the one thing that's weird. The other thing too, that I just wanted to touch on, which is they did do some stuff on, they put a couple of notes on the creation catalyst here, which, yeah, is that particularly if you're going to leverage a mythic plus or PvP upgrade item. So the way the creation catalyst works, you use like a base item for mythic plus or PvP or even the raid. And then you can transmute it into a tier piece of the same, I believe, armor class armor piece.
Slot, yeah.
Slot. Sorry, good word. But the nice part is it keeps all of its tertiary stats. It keeps any sockets the base item might have into it, and also keeps its upgrade path, which is really cool. Meaning, like, if you get like a base mythic +2 like set of gloves, you can turn it into set gloves and actually upgrade them up to whatever the top level upgrade path is for Mythic Plus.
That's actually super nice, because it means that, like, if you, in your example, get those +2 gloves, you don't have to wait until you upgrade them to +12 before you convert to a tier piece. You can just go and convert it to a tier piece and then start upgrading it after, which is really the way that I would want to do it. And it's really good that they're letting that happen.
Yeah, and it seems like a good, like, progression path for anybody who is just doing Mythic Plus, right? And just wants to get their tier, right? So, So that's sort of the other piece about tokens that came out. And one more thing, I actually didn't put this in the notes, but Wowhead, I forgot to put this in there. Wowhead did a bunch of stuff with the Great Vault. I don't know if you saw that post, but they did basically a bunch of data mining on, like, the percentage chance of getting a tier piece in your Great Vault. And basically what they've narrowed it down, it was basically roughly like 5-6% per slot in your Great Vault has a chance to drop a tier piece.
Yeah,
with, like, filling out all 9 is like a 45% or something like that chance to get it, at least one piece in it.
Yeah, that's, for me, I think that seems insanely low.
Really?
It means that, so, like, in raids with trading, you know, we're looking at, even with this reduced rate, which I incorporated into my sims, it makes the token gap worse because people can't make up for the token gap with their vault. But it means that, like, people raiding are going to be finishing their tier sets in like 5 weeks, 5, maybe 6 weeks. People doing Mythic Plus, like, you'll be lucky to get 3 pieces in 6 weeks that you can use.
Yeah, but then at that point, Creation Catalyst opens up. You'll have
2 weeks later.
Yeah, but you'll be able to cover those gaps with, like, a specific piece if needed, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like it's why is there this large gap in time spent? So this doesn't have a major impact on how long it takes you to get it from raid.
Right.
Like, the vault is kind of it has a small impact. Like, if they put it at 20%, it would shave off like half a week on average for completing your tier set from raid. Mm-hmm. It's just like, maybe you get an item you can use, maybe you don't. But it has a major impact for Mythic Plus because that's your only source. Until you get Creation Catalyst. So, like, if you're raiding, Creation Catalyst is really only for alts. If you're not raiding, then Creation Catalyst is, like, a mandatory system for completing your tier set. I don't know. It's just, like, really weird to have that dichotomy to me.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, my opposite position is that these tier sets are primarily from the raid. So, like, the idea would be is they're built upon being loot from a raid. So the fact that you can get it doing a different activity is a nice to have versus a main acquisition pathway, right? Like, so, like,
maybe,
like, that's, I think that's the only way that it makes sense in my mind, is that, like, from a system perspective, tier sets are a raid based piece of, like, reward, right? And so if they're going to add it to doing a different activity, if they add it at a similar rate that you can get it in raid, it exacerbates the problem of having to do everything versus like just focusing on one activity you find fun, right? So I think that's the that's my only point, is that I don't mind that, like, it's very nice that they give it to, like, that you're able to get it by just doing Mythic Plus or just doing PvP, right? Because I think it's upsetting to, like, has to do content you don't want to do. But at the same time, like, it's a similar idea of, like, if I really want to get a specific trinket from Myths, like, I can either do, like, I don't, like, do I just want to be able to do the raid and get it as, it like, a 5% chance? Like, does that make sense? Like, from a loot acquisition perspective? Like, or do I just want to do, like, my one Mythic Plus and hopefully I get it in my box or get it from doing that one dungeon, right? So I think in that regard, like, I'm okay with it. I was going to say it's actually kind of high, but
it's definitely not. My thing is, like, so if you're raiding, you get your tier set about a month into the patch, right?
Yeah.
If you're not raiding, you get your tier set 2-3 months into the patch.
Right.
That's like the time we're talking about. And that's my main issue with it is like, so there's the two things. There's the gap between it, like a month versus 2 to 3 months is like huge. It's huge. And then there's the like 2 to 3 months, I think just fundamentally being too long. Like people want tier sets, not to like chase tier sets. It's to have tier sets and to use tier sets. Right. So if you have to chase your tier set for like 3 months, because it's going to take you that long to actually get, you know, the three pieces maybe that you were missing from your vault using Creation Catalyst, because you got duplicates in the in your vault. Because
But there's always, I guess my point to there is like, there's ways to like, you shouldn't like, the idea is you shouldn't just have to do one piece of content to get all your best in slot gear.
Like, I think that's something. Like for me, it's not about best in slot gear, right? It's like, why? Well, so when they announced tier sets for this patch, they announced that they were going to be something you could acquire from Mythic Plus and PvP. And I think a lot of people's expectation, including mine, was that it would be similar acquisition difficulty. Like it would be something where you were kind of on a level playing field. And by putting it in the vault, it's also not something that is like super, super desirable for world first people, even for raiders, you know. I just don't understand where else you would have put it
that it made sense.
Well, like, I think having it in the vault is good. I think it should have been, I think it should be something either a higher drop rate or you're like guaranteed one piece per row or something like that until you've got it, you know, something to put it on a more level playing field. Like if it were, you know, raid takes you 5 weeks and Mythic Plus takes you 7 weeks, then
the raid's still faster.
Yeah.
Then I can just do Mythic Plus. So I supplement my raid drops with,
well, you're already doing Mythic Plus to supplement your raid drops. Like if you're raiding, you're doing
Right. Which is why can it not be the case that if you do Mythic Plus, you also should raid even at like a normal heroic level?
I mean, the thing is that if you're not in a raiding guild, then a lot of the benefits of raiding are basically non-existent because it's It's trading in raids that makes the acquisition rate so much better. So if you're not in an organized raiding group, then you don't have access to that, which actually, I guess, thinking about it now means that if you're just casually raiding, you probably are going to be on par with how long it takes a Mythic Plus player to get it. Because the stuff that the analysis that I was doing was like thinking from a CE guild perspective where we're going to be clearing normal and heroic every week to trade people tier pieces.
Yeah.
And if you're not doing that, then it's going to take you weeks too. So actually, maybe this is not a problem and I'm way overthinking it and everything's fine.
That's a good point too. Yeah. Because you're assuming that you're killing four bosses that drop tier every week, right? Which is like not the norm, even for like a heroic guild, like for the majority of people right now.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So we'll see how it plays out. I mean, it's nice that we now have like acquisition rates for all this type of stuff and we can sort of see like, you know, how much you actually want to put into like potentially doing that like 10th Mythic Plus dungeon. Like, does it make sense to go from like, what is it, 6 to 10 or 7 to 10, whatever?
4 to 10.
It's 4 to 10. Okay. It was even worse. As you can see, I haven't done Mythic Plus literally in months.
So Zajai asks in chat, isn't that what the forge is for? That being, you know, finishing out your tier set. And the issue is, Zajai, is basically just that the forge doesn't open until 2 months into the patch, is pretty much like what it boils down to. Having it open up so late is, I still think that's a mistake. I think that's a mistake because of how many people are gonna like fail to complete their tier set in 2 months and just unsub, right? That's my.
I don't think the forge is for your main. I think that's the point. The forge is for your alt. So you don't.
If you're primarily doing keys, the forge is for your main. The forge is how you finish if you're main.
I don't want to spend too much time because I think we talked about this the other week, but I think for me, the forge is more just like.
Yeah. For you and me, the forge is for our alts.
Yeah.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. Cool. I didn't even put that on the notes, and that took a little bit of time to get through. So the next big topic or post from last week is boosting communities are now prohibited in World of Warcraft is the title of this one. Yeah. And Yeah, so Blizzard banned boosting communities. Basically, I mean, if you guys aren't aware, haven't heard of these things, it's a sort of like a group of people that sort of centralized the act of selling progression to normal people, for not normal people, but just for players for gold. So like you could find these communities, they'd advertise, hey, we'll get you, you know, CE, we'll get you mounts, we'll get you specific gear, we'll do Mythic Plus runs, all for the exchange of gold. And they sort of centralized it all. So you could, as a player, have a level of trust with this community saying like, okay, if I give these people my gold, they will do what they're telling me to do. And there's always and in a lot of these communities, there was like a reporting system where like, if you as a person who paid didn't get what you were asked for, you could report the runners. There'd be repercussions for those runners. Similarly, like there was sort of all that sort of feedback and back and forth. But yeah, Blizzard banned them primarily because it created an issue in the game that many people pointed towards the game was pay to win, right? Where the idea is you could, because Blizzard had included something that you can convert real money to in-game money or and vice versa. It created an idea that, you know, if you didn't have a bunch of time or didn't really want to put in anything, or really the only way to do this, because nobody pugged, quote unquote, no one pugged anymore, was to pay somebody to run you through it. Right. And that was sort of the path of least resistance.
So this has been an enormously hot topic within my guild over the past week because of a couple of factors. First off, we did sales. We did quite a bit of sales. We have a guy on our guild that runs sales. So we're pretty connected to that. Second, we're on a small server, like very small, like problematically small. Cross realm advertising is banned right now, as far as we know, which means that if we want to sell, we can only sell to people on our realm, which may be a problem because there may not be really people to sell to, which is then a major problem because that completely cuts off a lot of our gold income because there's also not people to sell materials to. There's not a lot of people, like if we can't get gold, then we also can't do the thing that we did in previous patches for legendaries, which was transfer guild banks with materials because we can't get the gold on other realms to do it. Mm-hmm. So there's like a whole list of issues. And then there's like just the materials cost of legendaries being so high that farming all of them ourselves is kind of impractical too. There's layers of problem from this for us. But on the whole, like even though I think this is problematic for my guild, I do think this is a net positive for the game. And I think I don't think there's any one thing that like boosting communities really did that by itself is worth this, you know, this thing, this turmoil that this is going to cause. But yeah, it's the mix of the kind of economic impacts that you were talking about with pay to win and things like that, the mix of the impacts on pugging, which I think have been fairly noticeable. And you combine that with also a kind of declining player base as a whole as the expansion wears on, means that as more and more of the people that are able to actually do, you know, a heroic pug are dedicating those characters to sales and boosting, that means that it becomes harder and harder to get into a heroic pug that is actually able to complete the run unless you're buying.
Exactly.
And then there's things like trade chat being completely like uninhabitable. Like just turn it off.
Trade chat and the group finder.
Yeah. Just turn it off because it's like all Huaka and Starlight boosting ads all day, every day. I haven't been on Illidan or A52. Maybe it's still just as bad there because you've got, you know, 70 CE guilds on those realms. They're going to be doing their own advertising now, potentially.
Right.
I doubt it because honestly, people don't like advertising. Not seeing advertising. People don't like sitting there in Orgrimmar doing the advertising.
Yeah,
it's work. It's just work. People don't like doing it, which I think means that we're going to see a lot less advertising in general. But
yeah, I mean, like when we typically, like with my guild, we normally sell like end of expansion mounts is sort of like the way. So we did like Nyalotha sales and the stuff previous, like Jaina mount sales and stuff like that. And we used to pay people just to advertise. Like as a guild, like we got the bank got a cut, the guild got a cut if you're in the run, and then the advertiser, the person who pulled in the person, got a larger cut because like finding people is just so awful. like to do this.
We have the same setup. You know, there's a guild cut, there's an ad cut, and then there's, you know, player cuts for participating in the sale.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, but in general, I think the ban is good. One of our raiders was actually banned as a part of this. He is pretty well into sort of the boosting community. So, one of his characters, one of his accounts got banned.
We did not eat any bans from it, but we had a couple of people that had just signed up to do stuff with Starlight more at like a more involved level. And then this announcement happened. And I'm like, oh, well, that was a waste of time.
Yeah, now we're done here. I think in general, this will be good for the game long term. I think right now it's going to be a little bit rough, but it'll probably return. Like, cause that's the one thing I think that is generally missing that we used to see. At least I remember seeing a lot of was like, you get like weekly pug runs where like you'd have a leader or like a group that would run a weekly pug every week at this time. And like, you sort of got to know the people that were going to run at that point. So I know that's kind of gone away with boosting, but I mean, maybe we'll see a resurgence of like the Friday night such and such run, right? Or whatever it ends up being. Yeah. So
I think there's other things that have hurt pugging as well. We're like I said, this has been a huge topic of conversation in my guild because of the realm that we're on. And one of them is like this tier in particular had a lot of bosses, even relatively early, that were very pug unfriendly. Stuff like the dispel coordination on Remnant that is actually kind of difficult to do without voice comms. You know, if you're in a heroic pug, it's very easy to just get stuck on Remnant because your healers can't coordinate their dispels. And then of course there's Painsmith. Just like there's Painsmith.
There is.
But so that is an element of it as well, because it's not like in, say, Nihilotha. Well, Nihilotha was special because by the end of the expansion, you could like have 20 people that just pressed one over and over again and clear the raid because of corruption.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe say Eternal Palace. You know, you could get up to Zekul pretty reliably with any pug. Ashvane might be a little bit sketchy because of the damage requirement, but you could get all the way to Zekul without too much issue. And that's really not the case in Sanctum.
Yeah, that's for sure.
The other thing from this, I'm very curious to see where the economics of it, like on a small realm like mine, end up. Because we inherit a lot of the pricing from bigger realms because of the fact that like effectively gold on Turalyon is gold on Illidan, right? Because people just transferred stuff flowed so freely because of all of the boosting, guild banks moving around. Mm-hmm. Materials would go with those guild banks and get sold. So the prices were very similar, despite the fact that supply and demand were very different. So I'm curious what will happen with that. If maybe people will notice the fact that it's more worth selling materials on our realm now, and maybe our materials problems will go away. Or if materials will continue to be extremely low supply and just like awfully expensive, we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, I do not envy you at all being on a smaller realm with this. It'll hit us on Mal'Ganis a lot less, right, than you guys. So,
Ewok the Great in chat says that the A52 trade chat is back to anal spam. So it sounds like cool. Picture is healing.
Yeah, they're back to their roots. I love it. I love trade chat. So,
yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. All right. Well, boosting communities, no more. Oh, I feel so bad. Not really. No.
I'll say one more thing, and we'll put a pin in this. Yeah. This is the first time that I've been in my guild that we have seriously discussed doing a guild transfer.
Oh, okay.
Like because of this, and we're waiting to see what happens with the economic impact of this. But if it's bad, once the mass transfers that they announced come out, we're probably moving.
Yeah, you'll probably see as a result of this a lot more of that, where like guilds like yours, it can sustain themselves on a small server due to the fact that you can transfer gold so easily and like you can get it wherever you want. It's definitely going to be tougher. So that's for sure.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, let's hit a couple of PTR updates. And I'm actually going to do these in reverse order. So I'm going to hit the first one last. I think we'll talk a little bit about that one, but there's a couple quick things that happened on the PTR. First up is they added account-wide Soul Cinder transfers. So now you can transfer Soul Cinders. Good change. Yep. Along with this, they also added a new way to acquire legendary powers that take Soul Cinders. So now you basically have, what, three different options to buy old legendary powers that you can't get. Well, you could get, but they require running old raids. So you have like the offerings, the Korthia stuff, which I think is just research. And then now you have Soul Cinders to buy all three. So a couple different ways to get your old legendary powers, plus Soul Cinders being able to be transferred is cool. To be fair, I never... Like, luckily for me, I only ever needed one legendary, so I have, like, zero Soul Cinders. I have enough to make one more legendary.
Yeah, so I had the bright idea of getting my conduits through Torghast, and so that means I have effectively infinite Soul Cinders on my monk with nothing to do with them.
Nice, nice.
So this gives me something to do with them. I can transfer them to my other characters and use them to make legendaries, which is really nice. It means that basically, I need to double check, but I'm pretty sure I don't have to run any Torghast at all anymore.
Oh, nice.
And like, just period. I don't have to do any more Torghast ever because I got so many on my monk. But I got to double check the math on that because the new currency also comes from the, for the 9.2 legendaries, comes from Xerath Mortis. Right. So you can get it without doing Torghast. So I could just not do Torghast, like, on my DK. DK Torghast sucks. Like, don't.
Yeah.
It's a pain.
Yeah. I have to do a little bit more Torghast just on my monk just to get some other covenants up, but we'll talk about that in a second, why we have to do that. Yeah. And then the other big change that sort of came out on PTR this week is the way you actually get rep at Xerath Mortis, which has a bunch of people up in arms. So the previous way that you generally got the most rep was by doing sort of daily quests and the campaign and things like that. And what they've affected, any like world quests that are there, right? What they've effectively done is sort of lowered your world quest reputation, but increased it, or now it, not increased it, but now it also drops from doing rares, which people are upset about for some odd reason.
I mean, that was obviously everybody's favorite part of Korthia and the Maw, was doing rares for reputation. Everybody loved that.
Yeah, but it's okay. So here's the thing that I think WoW players, and I say this in the nicest way ever, me being a WoW player, just like to complain about some things, right? Okay,
but also, have you seen the amount of rep you get from a rare?
It's like 15 or 20. It's like nothing.
Yeah. So like, for context, the reps that people like complained about in Classic for being super grindy, you know how much rep you got from a regular mob kill?
It was like one or five, right? Yeah.
Generally five. So you could pull three regular mobs, kill them in 10 seconds, move on with your life, and have as much rare as one of these rare, or as much rep as one of these rares is going to get. And so this quote from WoWhead just like hurts my soul. Killing all 29 rares in one day will grant 495 reputation with the Enlightened. That is so not worth it. Oh my god.
It's not. And like, people are complaining about it, but like, to me, like, this is the type of thing that you reward the players that want to play the game the most, right? Like, no matter what they did with rares from a reputation perspective, it was either not put any reputation on them, and then people complain that, oh, I only have to play the game for 15 minutes to get max rep, this sucks, or put it on the rares and people are like, well, now I have to kill every rare every day, I'm gonna be so far behind, I'm gonna get a rep, it's just gonna be over, and this stupid guy. And so it's like, There's no winning in this scenario, right? The only way that I think you win, and I bet you people would still complain about this, if you were like, all you have to do is kill every rare once and you get exalted and you are done. Or it's not even that. Like, you can either kill every rare once or do daily quests for 2 days in a row, then you get exalted and you're done with the zone. Like, that's the other option there, is to just basically make it a joke to even do, right? So, like,
I don't really think so. Like, so I think the time gating on the, so like, basically they took the rep from the world quests, which are clearly marked in the zone. You go and you do your world quests. It doesn't really matter when you do them, as long as you get them done. They're just daily quests. You go and do your dailies, you're done. Fine. And they took that and they put it on rare mobs. So now, in order to get your rep done for the day, if you have like a goal that you're working towards, you have to go do your world quests, And then you have to try and get as many rares as you can. And stuff like the rares in Korthia that had, in some cases, hours-long spawn schedules meant that you may not be able to actually get your rep done in a timely manner. Now, that is, of course, if you have a rep goal that is beyond do the dailies.
Right.
And unlike Korthia, where in Korthia, all of the dailies contributed effectively nothing towards the rep that you actually cared about. The dailies in Xerath Mortis do contribute to the rep you care about. So this is slightly different in that regard, because like the only way to get rep with Archivist Codex in Korthia was to do, you did the four chests daily in the Maw or in the Rift, and right. You did rares. That was it. That's all you could do. So I do think that like I could be a little bit hyperbolic with this. Like obviously this is slightly different, but I would much rather them do something like just give us a daily or a weekly that's kill X rares, and you get a, you know, instead of it being, you know, kill all 29 rares for a measly 500 rep, you know, you get a daily that is, you know, kill two rares, and you just do it while you're doing your other dailies.
Yeah, I mean, and I'd be fine even if it was like a, to that point, like a weekly quest to kill like 15 or something, like we had to average like two a day, right?
Yeah.
And that way you could bang it out early, and then all you have to worry about is doing the daily stuff, or you could wait till like a weekend and track these things around. I think the idea though, and maybe like that's, I guess the issue that I have, which is the fact that in WoW nowadays, like there's such a, and this WoW head post is actually contributing to this, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the final section where they're like, if you do, and they basically break it down, if you do everything every day and you get all this rep, you'll complete this in this number of days. And it's like, if you do nothing and none of this and just your dailies, you'll do it in this number of days. And it's like, look at the big disparity. Well, it's like, yeah, there is a huge disparity because one person put in 6 hours a day more than you to get something done. So of course they're going to get this done sooner than you.
I think that, okay. Honest to God, if you are putting 6 hours a day into working on a rep, you should finish it in like 3 days.
I disagree. Only because, and this is the reason why, I did Winter Saver rep in Classic, and I spent 8 hours a day for an entire month to go from neutral to exalted with those fuckers. All right, and that is my barometer, right? If you want to go from neutral to exalted with someone, it's 8 hours a day for an entire month. That's the bar, all right?
It took so much less time to do the fucking bear people in Fellwood / Winter Spring. Oh my god!
Oh yeah. Those guys. No, well, the Winter Saber one.
The Winter Saber one was like a unique hell, though. That one should not be the barometer.
It was quest based. It was quest based. You had to do three quests. You ran. They were all the way in the north. You had to run all the way south, kill mobs. There's other people in the area killing mobs. You had to kill them because they stole your spawns. I have PTSD from that. Like, swear to God, like Winter Saber is a zone I don't do anymore. And I think it's a really pretty zone. I just don't go there because of this. In any event, that's like my barometer for like an actual like rep grind, is that like, if you want to put in the time, put in the time, but like, don't, like the way that a lot of this stuff is written, it's like, well, I'm going to be so far behind, or I'm going to be underleveled or underpowered because I don't do this. And so look at all the tedious here, right?
This is also missing the rep from the actual campaign quests in their calculations. Which is fairly significant. Panthea has been doing some testing on it. Apparently they've been getting different numbers when different people do it, which is kind of concerning. I don't know what's going on there.
I've heard that.
So I can't give a number on what they actually are going to give, because I don't know, because I've heard like four different numbers now. So we'll see. We'll see. I really do think that if you're putting this much, like if they have something that lets you put a bunch of extra time into a rep, you should be able to just get it done. Just let me get it done. I would love to be able to do a long weekend when the patch comes out and get my rep done.
I do not discredit as that something to be done. I just like, I don't understand people who complain about this and then who then don't actually go out and kill these rares. Right, like that's the other aspect, is like the majority of the voices that are going to yell about this are going to be also the people that kill like maybe three or four rares a day.
Yeah, like if killing all 29 rares a day got me exalted in a couple of days, a few days even, maybe even a week, if I could get exalted by doing this on 7 days, I would take that first weekend of the patch, and I would be killing 29 rares a day. But I'm not doing that for 15 rep a piece.
That's fair. That's fair.
The reward is not commensurate with the effort. Also, I wanna quote this Bruce Stepp from chat. Anom has a boomer barometer.
Look, man, it was tougher back in my day. All right, it was uphill in the snow both ways. Trounce around. We didn't have shoes. All right, we didn't have flying mounts, ground mounts. You get dazed. I couldn't afford an epic ground mount, so I was riding at 60%.
Maybe if you spent your time grinding the epic mount before you worked on the Winter Saber rep, you would have gotten it done in less than a month.
So the story about this, by the way, too, is the only reason I did it was because I was a gnome at the time, and you need to be exalted with Darnassus to actually ride the mount, because it was a Night Saber. And yeah. So the only reason I did it was one of the guys in my guild said I couldn't do it within this time period. And I said I could.
Oh, no.
And if I did it, he would pay for, like, you do cloth turn in. So he paid for all the cloth that I could turn in to get the rep that I needed. So that's, you know, that's one of the main reasons I did it.
And I'm guessing he paid it for all of that cloth. You succeeded.
Yeah, right? I did. Yeah. Yes. 100%. Like, yeah. With like date, like, let's just say it was like, it wasn't as close as in my mind. It was like, I did it within like the last 4 hours, but it was probably like a couple of days. Like I did it midweek and like the weekend that, it was due, like maybe at the end of the weekend. So yeah.
That's awesome. That's actually awesome.
But yeah, that's, so in any event, I agree, Bruce Stepp. I am old and I feel like things should maybe slightly be hard in this game, but I just, yeah, the whole whining about, not whining, but like the up in arms about this stuff, like, is just, I think a lot of it's from people who weren't going to do this anyway. And I think the other thing is a lot of people see this and they're like, I have to do this.
Yeah.
And like, there's, you don't have to,
like that in my guild. And it's the same, you know, in some ways it's the same people that are looking at legendary crafting in 9.2 and going, I am going to need 47 legendaries on my one character so that I can craft and recraft and recraft and recraft and recraft max level legendaries after every single tier piece drop. It's like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
Use your old one. Use a low eye level one.
Exactly.
It, like, literally, you can do a sim and the DPS gain from going from like a 262 to 278 legendary or whatever it is like 20. It's
minor. Fine.
Just don't
minor bank. Best.
Oh my god. It's like pulling teeth sometimes.
No, agreed. Agreed. All right, well, let's move off from this little rep shenanigans because we actually got some interesting things to talk about. And
What do you want to hit first?
Let's do the Mistweaver stuff because I think I made an announcement in the announcement chat in Peak saying this was our final episode because Mistweaver is dead as a class. I don't feel like continuing. They ruined Sinister Teachings. I guess in all seriousness, there's a couple of changes to Mistweaver, or sorry, to Monk in general up on our legendary powers, our legendary power, and then also a Necrolord ability. I'll cover the Necrolord one. It's basically that. They've increased the damage and healing effectiveness to 40% from 35, and the ability can no longer crit. From a Mistweaver perspective, less of a concern. The ability already could not crit, at least from the healing component of it. So minor, if it,
super sorry. Interesting, because like this is huge for Brewmaster and Windwalker. Like Windwalker, I think this is a PvP nerf more than anything else. It means that you can't high roll into, for example, a Chi-Gi proc on your spinning crane kick, you crit on that, then you get a bone dust proc, and the bone dust brew proc also crits. And so you go from like, you know, one damage to like 3000 damage on that proc because it gets, you know, multiplied by Chi-Gi, then multiplied by the crit, then multiplied by bone dust brew, then multiplied by the crit, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then for Brewmaster, it matters because of Stomp, basically. Like, you could really high roll with Necro Brewmaster on stomps. Like, if you invoke Nizao, you get a good stomp, it crits, bone dust brew procs, and then that crits, like, you are rolling in the damage.
Right. Yeah, so this definitely is less of a concern for Mistweaver, but yeah, I think a larger nerf to you guys.
So I can say, I don't know for Windwalker, I believe they're looking back towards Kyrian more often now. But Bone Dust Brew still being good for AoE. For Brewmaster, this basically means we are going to be playing Kyrian for raid. Bone Dust Brew already, like Necrolord already kind of niche. The inability for it to crit, like the 5% damage bonus doesn't really make up for that. So this is a nerf, a net nerf to the ability for us. So we're, it just further pushes us into the Kyrian camp.
Gotcha. And yeah, like minor, if like, to be fair, actually a slight increase in Mistweaver usage potentially of Bone Dust Brew. But then we get into the big nerf. What we really want to talk about is Sinister Teachings is the Venthyr legendary power. And what it does is it reduces the cooldown of Fallen Order previously by 5 seconds every time you crit while Fallen Order was active. They basically halved the cooldown reduction. So now it's only 2.5 seconds per crit, which to sort of illustrate it in practice, basically you are able to, in a raid, cast Fallen Order once a minute. So it's a 3-minute cooldown. You're able to take 2 minutes off that cooldown fairly reliably. I mean, to be fair, almost automatic, right? So getting Fallen Order out once a minute, very nice little HPS boost to Mistweaver. This basically makes it so you're only going to be able to cast it probably every 2 minutes. So halves the cooldown reduction, increases the time between casts, you know, by a full minute. And it's a sizable, potentially sizable nerf, right? I think a lot of people saw this and were like, well, Venthyr is dead. You'll never play this, you know, Covenant again. And there's a lot more nuance to it than that, right? So the biggest thing, it sort of comes from the fact that there's a bunch of other things that are occurring in 9.2, just not this nerf, right? So, excuse me, I have something in my throat. So the idea here is that, what, sorry?
Making use of that foot pedal, I see.
Heck yeah, I'm using that foot pedal. the biggest thing here is that right now, because you can cast Fallen Order so much, it looks like it's a ton of healing and any sort of healing meter. However, if you actually break it down, there's a ton of overhealing every time you cast it. So the idea is now you essentially just cast it whenever it's up, keeping it on cooldown as much as you can. And the huge benefit of it is just its uptime. I mean, it's up for, you know, basically 24 seconds out of every minute, which is a huge amount of time. Now you're going to sort of get less uptime, right? But you're not getting less healing potentially, right? Less healing in terms of when it's out, which is good. So it's really just a usage decrease versus an actual power while it's active decrease.
Right. So it's like, on the whole, it's going to be an overall HPS decrease. But,
right,
you know, if you're now more, you know, putting Fallen Order where it's good instead of just putting it out all the time because it's always up and you always want to be getting that CDR, it isn't as big of a net nerf because you can still just, you know, maybe you delay Fallen Order by 15 seconds to put it out with a big damage event instead of just YOLOing it on cooldown.
Right. Yeah. And I think, I mean, like talking to like Volk and Abbe about this a little bit, and some of the other sort of vets and things like that, it's generally probably going to be at the top end, potentially a 15% nerf in HPS. 10% really is where we think it's going to fall, and potentially even lower. Just because Fallen Order overhealed so much while I was out, and you didn't really use it at optimal times, right? You didn't use it when you potentially had a bunch of raid damage. So that's sort of the big thing. I think the other thing that also probably, at least for me, so this is, now we're going to move into like Anam feely crafting his way around how we think this class is going to play, because we're not ready really to say anything official. But in terms of the feely crafty side of it, it's, I think Venthyr still ends up being a very good progression covenant. Right, it has very solid soul binds and Theotar, so like you're not gonna be lacking there. Where like in the terms of some of the other covenants, like Kyrian, you know, in specific is pretty weak. When you judge it against the other ones, right? And Necrolord is okay with Emini and lead by example and things like that with the int buff, but I think it's still strong that side of it. And then the other thing too is you're gonna end up playing Refreshing Jade Wind with your four piece, which means you're not going to be able to leverage Chi Ji during progression, which is Chi Ji as a 3-minute cooldown is a very good like mana savings, right? You're still able to do a bunch of HPS, not use a ton of mana. So you're gonna be stuck using Yulan, which is an awful cooldown. It's literally like, I'm going to delete my mana bar right now and I'll hit this button and awesome. And you'll be running Refreshing Jade Wind, which is already, you know, more mana than you're typically used to using. So having Fallen Order on a 2-minute cooldown to cover when you need the HPS will be nice. when coupled with sort of the fact that you're running Refreshing Jade Wound with the four piece and the fact that you're not going to put as much mana into whatever you use Yulan, like you might use Chi-Gi today. So I think in general, like, this moves Venthyr more in line with, you know, Kyrian and Necrolord. We're not going to talk about Night Fae because Night Fae, while probably has the strongest Covenant abilities available in Dreamweaver, the whatever Feyline Stomp is not, it's just too much mana.
Yeah, I mean,
so
from a Brewmaster perspective, like, I think Night Fae has been the biggest disappointment of the expansion, where like everybody loves Feyline Stomp. It's just a fun ability. Also, yeah. Twitch is just telling me that I'm losing frames, but Feyline Stomp is great. Feyline Stomp
looks cool.
Cool looking ability that has a great sound effect, great animation, feels good to push the button until you see the damage number and you're like, why did I bother?
Yeah, exactly. It's
so lackluster. Night Fae is, for Brewmaster at least, entirely propped up by Nia's Spiked Burst. That one Soulbind trait just entirely props up the Covenant. Yeah. And it just it doesn't keep up. It's such a disappointment. I started the expansion as Night Fae. I would love for Night Fae to be the thing for 9.2, but it's just like, so, I think it's more likely we're going to see Venthyr Brewmasters than see Night Fae Brewmasters. Because now you get Sinister Teachings, which, by the way, this legendary nerf is only for Mistweavers.
Yeah, I guess that's the other thing too, that it doesn't come out. Yeah, this cooldown reduction is only for Mistweavers. So Brewmasters and Windwalkers keep their 5 second.
Which Brewmasters and Windwalkers cannot generate nearly as many events as Mistweavers could. So we were already looking at like a 2 minute cooldown on Fallen Order, maybe 90 seconds if you had like a nice AoE to do with it. But I think it's more likely that we will see Venthyr Brewmaster than Night Fae Brewmaster, which is such a disappointment because Fallen Order is so much less interesting of an ability.
Yeah, it does not look as cool. But no, I think that's a big thing to keep in mind, is that this isn't the death of Venthyr, I'll say, as an option. It's also not the death of Mistweaver. Like, I think we'll still end up very strong in the HPS department. We just won't, you know,
so,
be able to cleave with one button.
I'm going to pull up some stats for Warcraft Logs real quick, just to kind of illustrate, like, if this is even a 25% HPS nerf, I think it's actually not the end of the world. Because if we look at, this is Soul Render Dormancy. So obviously, like, Disc Priest is good despite the low HPS because it brings so much else and it's got burst healing and all of that. But literally, if Mistweavers ate a 25% HPS nerf on average, you know, they would still be number one on this chart. If I pull up Sylvanas Windrunner, 25% would put them down here. They would probably not be an optimal pick there because then they're doing less HPS than a Disc Priest or a Holy Paladin. But we don't think this is a 25% HPS nerf. Your estimate there was like 10 to 15%.
Yeah, and that's at the high end, I think, too. So,
And I think the only one where maybe it could be a bigger HPS nerf is Guardian because of how much damage goes out on that fight. This one, legitimately, you get so much value from Fallen Order if your other healers like let you, that, you know, it could legitimately be a much larger HPS nerf on this specific fight. And even then, like, Mistweaver is so far ahead that I think it's probably going to be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, there was definitely like, well, it's cool to be overpowered and like have an ability that just you hit and you feel super powerful. It was just way too strong as a Covenant and as a Covenant legendary. I don't know if I would have gone to 2.5 seconds. I think 3 seconds might have been a little bit more appropriate.
3 seconds is the original value, by the way.
Which is hilarious that they've gone under it. But I think we're still out on just so now that my Feely Crafty's out of the way, where I honestly, I think at this point, unless something changes, I probably still play Venthyr for progression, at least personally. Now that's out of the way. In terms of like choices or where you go from here, I think we're back to a 9.1 type sort of recommendation, which is like, to be fair, pretty much any Covenant is usable as a Mistweaver. There's not a clear winner. I think each of them have their own sort of like niches or like play style things. I think the only one that really loses out is going to end up being Night Fae. But there's still some tuning to be done. So we could see Night Fae, some level of tuning, push Night Fae up. Like I talked about a little bit about this in sort of our double legendary post we put up on WoWhead, which I said, like, look, Night Fae is like a conduit change away from being very good. And that conduit change, at least for Mistweaver, is like make the conduit affect the healing, not just the damage. And they do that. And like, then you get a extremely strong, you know, spell on a 30-second cooldown that, you know, while it's somewhat difficult to use and does cost a fair amount of mana, like you could, you know, you can make it work, right? So, but to be fair, I think the huge loser just in general about through all of this is that, like, Yulon is a fucking terrible spell to, like, it's an awful cooldown. And so, like, unless you have a bunch of innervates and you have a ton of external mana, like, literally you hit Yulon and you never cast Enveloping Mist. Like, you just let it heal for its, like, 0.2% Soothing Mist on the raid and, like, you call it a day. Because putting mana into that is a waste, right?
That's so hilarious.
Man. It's too expensive. Like, maybe you cast one to two Envelopings, but, like, it's a, 25-second buff or something like that. It's active for that long, something like that. And you can't cast Enveloping Mist even like every 6 or 8 seconds. Like, so, and then like the other part of it too, which is the crappy part, is if you play Kyrian and you get Call to Arms,
Elons that you then don't use.
Well, and the best, it's half effectiveness. So like Enveloping Breath is half as strong, it lasts half as long. Like everything is halved.
Everything is halved?
Yes, that's the awful part. For Brewmaster. Yeah, no, that's how it works for Mistweaver. Yes, everything is like halved based on which makes it like, then why do you don't even care about that at that point? Yeah,
that's wild, actually. So speaking of invokes, and then we'll get into I think the alliance thing. I'm gonna I might try and coordinate with my guild and to let me. We've been setting people up to do parses on different bosses. We've been letting our healers do things. We're actually gonna try and 2 heal Guardian tonight.
Oh, nice.
Because we one-shot Sylvanas on Friday and then proceeded to waste a bunch of the rest of our raid night wiping to other bosses. But we one-shot Sylvanas, and that was the deal we had with our healers. If we one-shot it, we would try and 2 heal Guardian. I might try and talk them into letting me do disgusting degenerate stuff on Guardian, playing Brewmaster with Call to Arms, and like just go nuts. Because Invoke is disgusting. There are people with nearly 1 million damage from Invoke Niazao on Guardian of the first ones.
Holy shit, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts.
That's crazy.
It's nuts. So I may see about that, but it's the Call to Arms Invoke Niazao is basically identical, just half as long. So
effectiveness is halved on ours. So it's great. Blizzard really loves Mistweavers. Super. Loves them so now, but I mean, we're not dead. I know that made that joke, but
yeah,
we need some sort of change. So
we're still planning to run them or run one. It's just it has changed slightly who we're planning to have play Mistweaver, because the person who was our Mistweaver this year is very much like a I want to play what's best kind of player, and they're like, I don't think Mistweaver is best anymore. I still think they're good, they're just not the best. And so he's wanting to reroll, which is fine. And we have another player that wanted to play Mistweaver anyway. So we're like, now you play Mistweaver. It's like,
nice. Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how it all sort of lays out when the final changes go in. But no, it'll be, I mean, like I said, I think you have a real, as a Mistweaver, you basically have a choice between, you know, Kyrian, Necrolord, or Venthyr. And you could play Night Fae, but Night Fae is definitely the weakest option, at least what we're looking at right now. So
I got to start catching up on Covenant guides and stuff for 9.2, because there's going to be some changes. Venthyr is actually going to be an option, I think, which is
I'm gonna have to actually
basically just adds a whole extra section of the site to my workload, because before I got to ignore Venthyr and now I don't.
nice. All right, well then the final big topic of the week, and this is huge news, if you enjoy playing with a shitty faction, Horde and Alliance can now do pre-made group stuff we'll be able to do pre-made group stuff together in 9.2.5. So Ian, coming back from the grave, first post in decades, basically put out this huge blue post on the fact that they have, you know, Blizzard has done a ton of work behind the scenes from a tech perspective to get this ready for 9.2.5, but you will now be able to invite cross-faction individuals to your pre-made group play. So this will include things like Mythic Plus dungeons, rated battlegrounds, raids, things like that. Anything where you would have used the group finder to put together a group or invite people together, you can now invite people from the Alliance if you're a Horde, or from the Horde if you're Alliance. All four of you over there. So it's I choke. This is actually something that people have been yelling and screaming about forever. And it's funny. This was, I think we talked about this a little bit when we did a little bit like wish list or like forward thinking conversations, right? We thought this is something that's definitely like a 10.0 on the table type feature. And I mean, they're dropping it early in 9.2.5, which is both cool and somewhat concerning. If you're thinking about like the fact that number one, there's going to be a 9.2.5, and number two, this isn't an expansion feature. So how close is the expansion?
So my thinking on this is twofold. First off, I already expected a 9.2.5. I've been adamant about that from the get-go. That's we right, are yep. getting a 9.2.5. It's going to be much like the 9.1.5 and 9.0.5. It's going to be game features and systems updates more so than content, which is exactly what we're looking at here, is systems updates. Like this is a very big deal. The second thing is that this is actually pretty limited. You can't have a cross-faction guild, which is actually kind of a big deal, because that means, for example, that if we wanted to let some of our raiders play Alliance, that means that they can't access the guild bank. We can't trade them items. So that means that we have to have an entirely separate like set of people doing crafting consumables and legendaries and all of that that goes into raiding in WoW. So it is fairly limited. It's still very good. So this is actually a big deal. We picked up a couple players recently that were Alliance until they joined us, and now they can't play with the people that they used to play with because those people are Alliance and they're raiding on the Horde now. And that sucks. This does let them go back and play with those people though, which is very good. Like it, and I kind of like how they're making this opt-in. So it queued content, this doesn't apply to, you will still only queue in with your own faction. Battlegrounds obviously have the mercenary system right now. But generally you just queue into your own faction, which I think is fine because LFR and dungeon queues have never been the problem with faction balance.
No, not at all.
So, but this is good. I'm liking this.
Yeah, no, I think this is a cool change. It's something really nice for the game. I think like whenever you talk about faction stats and like where, like how it looks, right? Like the joke is always that like Horde like CE will fill up in like 2 weeks and like Alliance CE will fill up in like 2 months, right? Like there's a huge disparity in that.
My guild is very far off of Horde Hall of Fame. We are almost like my raid team is almost Alliance Hall of Fame, if not actually Alliance Hall of Fame. We might have actually gotten Alliance Hall of Fame if we had been Alliance this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a huge disparity just in that, in terms of like end game raiding content and just in terms of the size of the factions, right? The same imbalance is that we see, like, where you and I are very familiar in raiding, right? The same imbalance is there in PvP. And even in Mythic Plus teams, right? Pretty much every major Mythic Plus team, if you want to do Mythic Plus at a higher level, you're going to be Horde. Horde is just dominant from like just a faction population perspective. So this change is helpful there. It also, to be fair for me, alleviates one of the things that slightly bothered me when I would read the story about this, is that pretty much since like Mists of Pandaria, the end of almost every expansion has been the Horde and Alliance coming together to defeat some big bad and save the world as a partnership.
Yep.
And then immediately we start with, we hate each other. Like we save the world, kill Nazoth, you know, stop. Who is it? Not Kil'jaeden. Who's the last boss of Legion?
Argus.
Argus, kill Argus, the world or whatever, watch Sargeras stab the world too. And then we hate each other, then we start fighting again, which is like, I get that part of it, but at the same time, like it doesn't, the story never really made sense. So this is super cool. I'm really excited for it. To be fair, all of my friends at this point are Horde, so it doesn't really affect me very much. But yeah, it's good of what it means in the future, which is, all right, do we eventually get full integration where you have cross faction guilds, right? Because I think guilds is the biggest feature missing. They do have cross faction communities. So you can basically build a community, which is sort of a feature they've had for a while that they've tried to push, that can be cross faction and you can invite from there. So that's helpful if you like are involved with like a bunch of people that might have characters, you know, spattered everywhere, and things like that.
But communities can't have guild banks. They can't get Hall of Fame achievements, you know.
Yeah, there's some missing pieces there.
There's definitely some missing pieces. So kind of my thinking on this change to cross-faction play right now is pretty clearly targeted at the more high-end community, I think. Because the more casual player base just doesn't use the pre-made group finder all that much. So they're not doing pre-made groups. Like, you'll use it for keys, and this does help with keys on Alliance. This helps a lot with keys on Alliance. That is one thing that stretches what, like, keys and pug raids on Alliance. This actually helps a ton with. So maybe it's not entirely for us, but this is something that it feels incomplete, but they're like, we can accomplish a lot of good by publishing this incomplete version in 9.2.5. And then in 10.0, we can maybe be ready to go and be like, cross-faction, guilds, and everything. And just all the stuff is cross-faction now. And that's really the kind of like general release. So like, we're getting maybe kind of like a, you know, beta version of cross-faction play in 9.2.5 that's not feature complete, and then 10.0 is going to be like on the box, you know, cross-faction gameplay for everybody. You know, all, you know, you can join a guild and you can be in a guild with orcs and draenei and humans and dwarves and blood elves and I don't even know what else, like
mechanomes.
So that's another thing. Speaking of mechanomes, Alliance racials are very good. Mechanomes in particular are the top simming race for a lot of specs because their racials are kind of silly good. And this was one of, so the Hall of Fame and the Alliance racials, I think, were two things that Blizzard tried to move the needle on, like faction balance, but it just was too little too late. So it we may have people in 9.2.5 that, you know, faction transfer and continue raiding with us because, like, you know, they'll have to cover the consumables that we would normally handle at that point, I guess. Just so that they can get, you know, mechanome. And then there's people who want to do it because they just like the Alliance races. Like, I will definitely have some, like, draenei and night elf characters and things like that.
Those two?
Yeah, those two. Don't fight me. Oh, yeah, you're going to say gnomes. You don't even get to talk. You're going to talk about gnomes.
Of course. It's the best Alliance race. The mechanomes, the rego gnomes are all good. Now,
maybe this is the last podcast.
It's true. It is true. I agree with everything you said. I think this is an awesome change. It does sort of, I found this really funny. So some of the things that they talked about was like, one of the things is there are certain legacy instances that are not going to be available to do this,
which BOD, is like, the bosses are in different orders. So that one you can't do. Icecrown Citadel, the gunship fight, is different for Alliance and Horde. You can't do that one. And there's one other one that they mentioned. I don't remember what it was.
Trial of the Grand Crusader, PvP fight is different. Quote, unquote, PvP fight is different, There's probably a couple other different, like, even dungeons probably, too, where, like, there's a difference in the way that the dungeon acts or, like, how the mechanics of it work.
Yeah.
Or, like, story through it, based on your faction. But, yeah.
This very much seems like kind of a pre-release, you know, still got some rough edges, but the really enfranchised community is going to super appreciate it kind of release. And then we'll get a more general release guilds version of it in 10.0 would be my hope, my kind of expectation on this. Right. And maybe we don't. Maybe they look at this and go, this has been really successful. There's not a reason for us to invest the extra development time to make guilds cross-faction or whatever in 10.0. But I would hope they do because it would make the logistics of just like running a guild a lot easier for me.
Right.
But
I'm
super happy about this.
Yeah, and I'll be super interested to see how they potentially, like, going forward, how this works with, like, certain areas that have traditionally been, like, alliance only or horde only. So typically, like, capital cities, right? Like, does this change any of the dynamic there? Or is there sort of, like, a, maybe not a suspended disbelief, but, like, a general game understanding that, like, while you as an individual player can be friends with the opposing faction, as a general idea, the factions are not friendly, right? Or like they're somewhat friendly, right?
That is how this initial version is going to work. Like, you won't be able to go into Stormwind as an orc and expect to not get instantly murdered by the guards. But who knows if that's going to stay that way in 10.0.
So. Right. Well, there's also a ton of, like, my little brain thinking about the ways to grief people is, like, because you remain hostile outside of an instance to anybody of the opposing faction, there's a real fun thing where you could, like, just summon in people to, like, quote unquote, go to a key and just kill them over and over again in a meeting stone.
I mean, imagine, so there are meeting stones in both Orgrimmar and Stormwind for the Ragefire Chasm and Stockades, respectively. How many people actually read the zone name on the summon before they click it?
I just accept it. Yeah, I just click real quick.
So even if being in a group makes you friendly to the people in the group, if you get summoned to the Stockades, I know for a fact that there is a guard stationed right next to the meeting stone.
You don't even need a meeting stone. You just do it with a warlock. You can summon them in, like, the middle of Orgrimmar. Oh, gosh. All the possibilities. Or the bottom. Oh, you could put them in the lake. Oh, I guess they could mount and get out of the lake that's in the...
You want to like, drop them on top of guards. That's what you
want. Yeah.
They get put in combat while they're loading into the zone. They can't mount up. They just probably die before they get out of the loading screen. You know.
Oh, this sounds like a great patch. Like, World of Warcraft players, super friendly. Nobody will actually ever do this.
I mean, this just reminds me of, and, like, maybe this was just a private server thing, because I definitely was playing Burning Crusade on a private server. But we would go to Netherstorm, and we would get out on the rocks, and we would drop a closet, cut so it was, like, angled, like, as far over as it could be, and summon people, and they get summoned straight up and down, but they get summoned to, like, the center of the lock closet, and so they would get summoned and fall to their death.
So we did something similar, except we did it in Un'Goro. And there was a lake in Un'Goro where if you swam to the bottom, you couldn't swim to the top before your breath meter ran out. So we would say, like, hey, we're summoned into, like, Un'Goro to do, like, Devil Swords or something.
Yeah.
And we'd summon people to Un'Goro, like, or lower levels, like, hey, we're going to get you this really cool loot. And we'd kill them.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
Warlocks, by the way, still have unending breath.
Yeah.
So you would cast it on the people that were doing the summoning so you wouldn't run out of breath. And then the people who were getting summoned, they would get summoned in, they would be on the loading screen, their breath would start ticking down. So they would run out of breath well before they reached the top of the lake and would probably drown before they could get out.
They did, 100%. We had 100% success rate with that one. I was not the nice, like, old me in WoW was very much the type of person where if I could, laugh at someone's misfortunes. I was laughing at someone's misfortunes.
And this is why I don't feel bad about laughing at your experience with the Winter Sabers.
God. I can still, the beads, man. The beads that came off. I had so much fire water too.
Yeah.
My gnome was like 8'6" at all times. that was, being a warlock back then was good times. I was a warlock too doing this. I got essentially almost a free epic run anyway.
Yeah.
It was good. But yeah, this cross-faction stuff I think is going to be super cool depending on how far they take it. I think this initial thing's really cool. It does come into, like, a couple of questions, like, how does this work with cross faction, like, mythic rating, right? So, like today, like, you can't do cross realm mythic until Hall of Fame closes, but can you do cross faction mythic if they're on the same server?
Right. And that's something, like, it's not going to matter for this patch because it's going to come out after cross realm mythic opens, almost certainly, unless 9.25 is, like, really early into the patch cycle.
Yeah.
Or 9.2 is super late, which let's not bet on that one. Mostly because I don't want to win that bet.
Yeah.
So it's not going to matter for this patch, but that's definitely something for 10.0 that they have to be thinking about, right? Is, like, you know, we've got this restriction. That's actually another thing. Okay. kind of in this same vein of just like reducing barriers. I would like to see them go to the heroic lockout system for Mythic.
So boss by boss.
Boss by boss. You can go and do it with other people. You can run it again, but you don't get loot. You know, all this stuff.
I don't know how I feel about that.
So my thinking on this,
yeah,
is basically like when, you know, a friend, you know, messages me and goes, hey, do any of your players have alts that they can bring? We're down a person for raid tonight. And I have to say no, because everybody's saved. You know, how nice would it be to just be like, oh yeah, I'll ask and see if anybody can come, because they can just take their mains. And even if they're already saved, they can still go and help. They can still go raid. And that, because of the hard like 20 person limit or requirement, like you need exactly 20 people, making it easier to fill that 20th spot when you have someone post out or anything like that. You know, when we needed a warlock, having to get an unsaved warlock every week was a challenge, and it would have been nicer if we didn't need that.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I can see that for sure. It also helps
because if you've ever pugged Mythic and you like got in a group and you killed the terror group and it was kind of sketchy, but whatever, and you get to the eye and like, it's just clearly not happening. Right. Yeah. Now you're at a 1 of 10 lockout. You're unlikely to be able to kill any more Mythic bosses that week. And it's like, might as well log out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess, I mean, it does help in terms of like, yeah, I guess it helps in terms of like moving like alts around or being able to help your friends, right? And things like that, like on your main. Cause like as a person, like typically for me, like I don't play alts very often. It's very rare that I'll play alt really before the final patch in almost any expansion. So
yeah.
For me, yeah, definitely it would be nice, but I don't know. I just, it's one of those things where like, I don't, it's so ingrained in like, you have one instance that you go through and like you're all saved and stuff like that in terms of like the way that I played this game, that like moving the heroic lockout system to Mythic, I guess it's fine. Yeah. I mean, I can see the benefits of it. It's just, to me though, if they ever do that, and this is sort of the cynic in me, is that it basically just means personal loot's here to stay. Right. And so like, that's sort of the idea.
We can end on that. So I've obviously been doing a lot of thinking and work on loot modeling recently.
Yeah.
I've got entire sims working out how tier loot drops and like, what's the optimal way to distribute tier loot and all of this stuff. And one thing that this has led me to realize is that even if they reintroduce master loot as an option for world first guilds, they will continue to use personal loot because they can abuse it with splits. For people like me, for my guild, we would probably switch to master loot and just use master loot, because it's, if you're not abusing personal loot, I do think master loot's better.
Yeah.
But personal loot has so much additional room to exploit the mechanics of it, you know, to do things like stacking 100% cloth wearers or 100% mages and knowing that you're only going to get mage loot. Whereas like master loot, if you have a heroic group that's 2 tanks and you know, 28 priests, then you're going to waste 3/4 of your loot because neither of your tanks and none of your priests can use a rogue's daggers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know that that's a problem. I don't know that that is a problem. Because there are 5 world first tier guilds and thousands of not world first tier guilds. Yeah. And having master loot back would be a positive change for those thousands of not world first tier guilds.
That's fair. I agree. Yeah.
It is something to think about, because we would not see a reduction in splits with the reintroduction of master loot, because personal loot is better for the people that are willing to spend all of this time and money on running splits for the world first race.
Yeah. I mean, even like, regardless of, I think the looting system at the ward first level, they're going to do some degenerate stuff anyway, just to like maximize it. So whatever, like, whatever system Blizzard designs, like, they will do the thing that is the most efficient for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, I mean, I think in general, like, the master loot, I think it's just, it's nice just to be able to like give up something, right? Or like put loot where it's, I don't know, where it's most useful.
Yeah. I mean, master loot also, going back to some of the tier stuff from earlier, master loot papers over, like, with master loot, it doesn't matter the breakdown of tokens. Except for like really extreme cases where you have like one token per class, it really doesn't matter the breakdown of tokens, because you just give it to the right, you just give it to people. It doesn't scale with the number of people you have of that class, so it actually becomes worse to class stack with master loot.
Right,
which is fine, because like my guild's not class stacking, most guilds aren't class stacking, and so master loot's better for that, for us.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, well, I think we'll see. I mean, we'll see how where they extend from here, right? With this whole cross faction stuff. I think you're right, though. The main target is sort of the higher end group of players, right? Players that engage, you know, more in sort of the pre made type activity. Well, that's fair in what they're targeting, but I think it's definitely more towards that group. The folks that are just generally more involved in WoW, we'll say, versus like maybe somebody who's a little bit more casual that comes in, like plays for a couple days, like at the start of a patch, and sort of then comes back like once every other week to do some stuff. So,
which one thing this does actually is, you know, if you and a buddy come back at the start of a WoW patch, you know, and previously you wouldn't have been able to play together because one was Alliance, one was Horde. Well, maybe you're still Battletype friends or real ID friends. Right. Now you can group up and do things that you couldn't before, which is neat.
I don't have to, I'll tell you, when a bunch of my friends came back the last time, that was the biggest discussion point, was like, you guys have to be Horde because I'm not coming Alliance. Like, you guys can play on Alliance with yourselves, it's fine, or you can come be Horde with me, right? And we can do stuff. And so like, that's sort of, that alleviates that issue. So no, I think this is generally like overall really cool change. It's one of those things where a lot of people kind of, some of the feedback I saw as we sort of wrap this up was a little bit negative in terms of like, this is just Blizzard sort of pulling another ripcord, or like, hey, the game, now you can tell the game is really dying because like, this is something I think they never break. And I think for me, this is just in general, not negative at all. It's just a positive change, right? It's like the game evolves. Like, there's no recent MMO coming out has done this sort of hard and fast faction based like breakup, right? Even, like, New World did it, but you could still cross those people, right? Like, you'd still group up with people from a different company or whatever they were called. So
yeah, like, you could be a purple player and you could go in and do things with blue players and green players, and even though you were different factions for PvP purposes, you could just group up and go and do things. And
exactly,
that's really what we're getting here, is like the ability to group up and going and doing things, which, like, I play with war mode off anyway, so this is just strictly positive.
I play with it on.
Yeah, no, screw that.
Get it? You get extra stuff. You get extra AP. The numbers, there's no AP faster anymore. Whatever, anima power. There's anima power.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It's fair. Fair. I think I'm over 100, so okay. Get rid of some. Ultimately super positive. I think we're on the same page. Super positive. I'm super excited to see how far they extend it. So
this is the most excited I have been for a change in WoW. I'm trying to think of the last thing I was this excited about, and I honestly, there may not be one. Like, monks. This is such,
when they put monks in the game,
I was not super excited for monks. Like, monk is something that I didn't play until Legion, really.
Oh, fair. Yeah, you know, new blood, you don't care. You're not a lifer.
I'm just playing in BC, so technically not a lifer, but, you know, I was there.
Kidding.
I was there. But yeah, I don't know. This is super exciting. Probably the most excited I've been about anything since like the end of BFA. And it wasn't like being excited for Shadowlands. It was that I would never have to think about
BFA's ending. Corruption was finally dying. Yeah. Yeah, no, this is really an exciting, like, positive change, which is fun. So,
And I will say, to kind of put a pin in things, as much complaining as I do and have done about the acquisition systems for 9.2, if you look back at BFA, this is so much better. Oh my God. It's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice. No, it'll be fun. This and then 10.0 seems really exciting, which if you've been, I know we only have a couple minutes, but if you've been keeping up with the leaks, the quote unquote leaks that have been coming out, the fan fiction, if it's anything like any of those, it's going to be awesome. We're going to get dragons. We're going to get Tinkerer class.
So the world's changing. We're going to get all the we should do an episode. It's just all the leaks are true. And we just get all the leaks we can. And we try and make a cohesive like story out of it.
I will do it.
That's like literally Dragon War with mecha tinkers in the void.
With the new living world. It's the new living world too, where they're gonna change old zones one at a time as like the tinkerers slowly tinker with things. Oh dude, that was the best one lately.
Yeah.
That's how they're getting tinkers in the game. They better not, because like I'm pissed. So like real quick, I think I said this, but I bought a bunch of domain names last year or 2 years ago when they were doing the expansion release, all about tinkers. It was like Tinker.town, like I had Tonkertown, I had some other Tinker related things. They all just expired. I just let them expire because I'm like, why am I spending like $15 per domain for these things? Mm-hmm. So if Tinkers actually go in the game, Tonkertown's available, guys. It's only $12 a year. But yeah, all those now have expired. So they're free to be picked up by anyone who wants to sit on some weird domains about Tinkers. So
great. Yeah. Great. All right. But I think that is going to wrap up today's episode. Very, very exciting week for the game.
So much stuff.
Yeah, just like, oh my God, there's so much. But next week, we have a very exciting week for this show because it's going to be episode number 100. Something that's been literally like half a decade in the making.
Yeah,
because of how inconsistent the schedule for the early episodes was.
Yeah.
But maybe we grab Babs next week and we do a, I don't know, a big episode 100, whatever.
Yeah, like we just back. Get
Babs and actually talk about Windwalkers for once. Maybe that's
nah, our episode. No, nobody's playing that class. Dead class.
That's back.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's exciting.
It's very exciting. But that is it for our show today. Thank you all for watching and or listening. And if you enjoyed this show and you want to support it and the other work that we do over on the Peak of Serenity, like those Covenant guides that we were talking about earlier, you can do that over at our Patreon at patreon.com/Peak of Serenity. And of course, we would encourage you all to come and join our Discord. It's a great place, Patreon or not. There's a lot of great people in there. The lounge channels are great. The questions channels are always active. If you have any questions, it's a great place to get them answered. And of course, your weekly reminder that the Brew Lounge is the best lounge. That's it for the show today. Have a great week.
See ya. Bye.